This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. Welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web in our 203rd episode, where we begin a new era of Cardinals football because we have a new starting quarterback. It's the Josh era. It's the Josh Rosen era, and that's what we're going to talk about in this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site. My co-host, as always, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. He joins us from Revenge of the Birds, the SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And guess what? Cardinals are really, really bad. They showed some promise, but they're really bad. And now we've got a new quarterback. So bring on the rest of the season, guys, because even if we're terrible, we do have something to write about every single week because we got a rookie quarterback starting.
Yeah, it's that time. I mean, I think it was a little, I don't know. I don't think it's sooner than we expected, but it's definitely not how we expected it to go down. I think that's safe to say.
This could have happened with a Sam Bradford injury, but the truth of the matter is I don't think anyone before the season ever imagined that would be bad enough to bench, because we've never really ever seen a bad Sam Bradford play in an NFL football game. He's been productive and solid. And, you know, the Cardinals, the whole offseason, really, really believe, but something is up. Something is up with Bradford in his mind, in his arm, in the offense or whatever it is. And that they had a great first quarter. They jumped up 14-0, and we're all right. Things are turning around, and then back to the same crap. And in the end, a 16-14 Cardinals loss after a 14-0 lead. Sam Bradford turns the ball over three times, picked off twice, scrambles. When I look back at the stat, I didn't realize that it was at the line of scrimmage because I thought he had gained like 3 yards. He didn't even get back to the line of scrimmage, fumbled the ball, and that was the end of Sam Bradford. And now we move on to the Josh Rosen era, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight. In this episode, we're going to talk about everything about the Josh Rosen move. Is it the right moment? Was it the right moment? What exactly is what happened to Bradford and what we can look forward to from the rookie the rest of the year? And we're going to talk about, what is the team's fortune? What is their outlook remaining on the rest of the year? We're going to go back and look at what went wrong against the Bears, as well as in particular, the play everyone is talking about, the 3rd-and-2 run play to Chase Edmonds when David Johnson wasn't on the field. And then we'll look forward to, we'll talk about whether we think the coaching staff is in trouble with an 0-3 start, and then look ahead to the next couple games. They play the Seattle Seahawks at home this next week, this weekend, followed by the San Francisco 49ers. They've got a couple of division games that right now look pretty winnable. So here we go. And let's stop, talk about the move to Josh Rosen. So Sam Bradford, he's in the Reds. They're in scoring position, and all they got to do is take care of the football. They're at least in field goal range, and then they go up 19-14. I mean, sorry, they'd go up 19-13. And then, I mean, Cardinals defense has been pretty solid thus far, and so you put yourselves in a good position, but he fumbles the ball, and then Chicago just long drive, moves down the field, kicks the field goal. And you could tell that Bradford was broken. He wasn't injured. He was broken after that fumble because he knew what was coming. He knew that he basically had just lost the game and probably lost his job. And it just took long enough. So it was 4:31. Josh Rosen enters the game. Everyone was excited. I know I was excited. Like, all right, we're going to see. And then he showed some flashes. He made some nice throws. But ultimately, he was intercepted on a fourth down play. And then the Bears, you know, manage, you know, Cardinals hold up, get the ball back, and then they just ran out of time. Josh Rosen is sacked on the final play of the game, and they lose 16-14. And then on Monday, Steve Wilks makes the announcement he is moving on to Josh Rosen. Was it the right moment to go to the rookie in that situation, Seth?
You know, I think it was one of those situations where they already made the decision before, like right after the turnover. So you were sitting there, I think there's a roughly 11, almost 12 minutes in the game, we'll call it. And they had made the decision. They had already told Josh, you know, and then the defense proceeds to play probably their worst drive of the game. The Bears take 7 minutes off the clock. And it's 4 minutes and 14 seconds or 16 seconds left or whatever after they kick the field goal. And, you know, and by that time it's, I mean, what do you do? I mean, that's an honest question. Like, what do you do? You've already made the decision 7 minutes ago in game time. I mean, it's probably been 20 minutes in real time. And so what do you do? Do you tell the kid, never mind? Like, like you said, Bradford was mentally broken by this point. So, I mean, I just think it was an unfortunate circumstance that they backed themselves into a corner like that, and it happened the way it did. But in the same way, I think they did a really nice job for about what, 4 or 5 plays before before the last two plays. You know, they protected him. They gave him some. I mean, no throw in the NFL is easy, but they gave him some easy throws to hit, and he hit them. And you know, he showed off the arm strength and the ability to move in the pocket. He's now on the board as having the longest run for the Arizona Cardinals in 2018.
That's ridiculous.
Single rush attempt for 12 yards. I mean, and so that's the whole thing is, you know, he did a little bit of all the positives that we'd been waiting for. And now he's, you know, and then it was kind of over, you know, and so I think the gist of it is they made the decision. And after they made the decision, they couldn't go back on it.
Right. And it was smart. I mean, if they're going to do it, that it made sense. But here's the thing. And let's turn the table around. What if they had gone back to Sam Bradford, now, assuming that they didn't make the decision and, you know, they waited until about halfway through the drive and they're like, oh, okay, we're going to get the ball back. We're going to send Sam. Would not every single person, every fan, every media member, every reporter, every talking head would have been ripping the Cardinals and Steve Wilks for not turning to Rosen, especially. I mean, look at what the second half had been. It had been interception, fumble before that. And on that fumble, then you see Sam Bradford after he was on. Granted, he got hit pretty hard, but he's on the ground for a good amount of time. You can tell he knew, like we said, he was broken. And one thing we haven't seen from Sam Bradford yet, and I think it's probably the case where we haven't seen that really as much as his whole career. He's not Carson Palmer. Carson Palmer was one of the most mentally tough. He was one of the most mentally tough quarterbacks we'd ever seen. He forgot things in a hurry. And when things went poorly, he knew how to go, all right, I got this. We saw it time and time again where he would have, you know, that back in 2013, that Seattle game, threw 4 interceptions. It was awful that game. And then one drive is all it took. He did that in the playoff game against Green Bay. So Cardinals fans are used to a very resilient quarterback. And I think 3 games of being bad just finally ruined Sam.
Well, and I think the other thing was it was kind of a cosmic thing the way it went down is because he had been, you know, he had started the game fast, the 2 touchdowns on the first, what, I think 3 drives. and then it kind of you could kind of feel the desperation mounting, right? Like all of a sudden they can't do anything offensively. We started to see the three and out, you know, parade, and then you had the turnovers, and so it became this moment in the game where they're finally getting some positives again. You know, I was with my dad and my brother-in-law watching the game when he made that throw to Christian Kirk, the long throw to set them up into the red zone area to get them into scoring position for the first time in three quarters. I looked at my dad and I said, if he is accurate with that pass, Kirk is still running. Instead, he threw it about 3 or 4 yards behind Kirk. Kirk had to stop and come back to the ball, and the defense was able to make a play. I mean, it was still a nice game. There was nothing wrong with it, but it was just that situation where you look at it and you go, man, he just doesn't have it. And then, so you could feel the desperation coming, right? Like you could feel that he felt like he had to make something happen, and he missed, again, he didn't really miss the throw, but he missed putting the ball into a place that would have allowed Kirk to make a big play happen. And instead you get, you know, a semi big play. And so he's feeling the pressure. He knows that they have to get points here, and the pocket breaks down and Bradford says, hey, I can make this run. And let's be honest, you and I probably had the same thought of just fall down, Sam. Like, don't try to run. Like, don't do that. And I think that was kind of the end of the whole Sam Bradford experiment, is that he was so desperate to make a play that he was doing something that he's never really been known for, even before the injuries, and post injuries he's basically avoided trying to do at any time. And so it just showed the desperation of the situation, and probably the career situation that he was in, trying to make sure that, you know, this is knowing that that was probably the last drive of his career, at least for the Arizona Cardinals, if it didn't work out. And, you know, unfortunately it didn't. I mean, when maybe the best defensive players on the other side of the ball on the field, I mean, he's going to make a play, and he did that. And, you know, Bradford had to be benched at that point. Like you said, you can't go back to a guy that's committed three turnovers in the second half and put a team that was up 14-0 into a position to lose a game. And that's, I mean, single-handedly, that's what Bradford did with his mistakes.
Well, and more importantly is how we reacted to that. There is Philip Rivers fired up, Jay Cutler indifference, Carson Palmer, just the cold icy stare of, all right, I'll get it next time. Let's get the ball back and we're going to win this thing. Bradford laid on the ground, defeated. He laid on the ground, defeated. It was, you know, what it reminded me of as I'm thinking about it now was the game before the final game of Kevin Cobb's career with the Cardinals, when he got sacked 9 different times. And what was one of the last ones, he just sat there and like, he couldn't believe it. Just, he's like, I can't do anything. And then the next week he, you know, he has his ribs broken and he's done for the season and for his career, because he never bounced back completely from that. And once that happens, if he's got that mental stability, he's not mentally unstable, but if he's
got that extent, resilient,
yeah, right, you can't go back to him, because unless he recovers, like, but it was at that moment anyway that Wilkes had made the decisions. Like, we gotta get Josh in there. We gotta see if there's anything. And at that point, they're just grasping at straws. I will tell you this: that entrance for Rosen would have been the perfect beginning to his career. Perfect beginning. You know, 4:31 left in the game, down 2 points. He's going to lead them to a game-winning score. Rosen's the rescue. Cardinals win. We never look back. Instead, it's an interception. I mean, and the truth is, that's the sort of thing that happens a lot in NFL games. It's how those end up ending. But so it wasn't the Jake Plummer beginning. It wasn't even a Baker Mayfield beginning. Jake Plummer, if you recall, back in 1997, he came into the game, and what was it, like a 97-yard touchdown drive in his very first drive in his NFL debut. It was a thing of beauty. I was not in the country at the time, but I read about it. But I was hoping for that. It was what a perfect storybook. It was a written right there, and he didn't follow the script. Instead, the Cardinals are on three. But now he's the starter, and here's the thing. So what can we expect from him?
It's one of those situations where and this is going to sound incredibly negative, and it is purposefully, we have no idea, because the way that the offense has flowed hasn't made a ton of sense. David Johnson's statistics are not good, but more than that, David Johnson's usage is abysmally low. You know, there were complete issues with Bradford. I mean, nobody's going to dispute that, but the play calling hasn't exactly been great either. I mean, David Johnson has 34 carries on the season. James Conner had, 32 in the first game of the season?
And so did whatever his name, Carson, with the Seahawks on.
Yeah, Chris Carson. Yeah. So that's, yeah. So, I mean, 34 carries on the season is, I mean, we're talking 11 carries a game for maybe the best running back in the NFL. That's abysmal. So that's the thing, is we don't know, because we don't know what to expect from the offense, because it's not fair to expect a rookie to come in and completely revamp an offense that has been bad with usage, just as bad as it has been bad with play.
But don't we feel like it is good? Doesn't the vibe feel like that the offense is going to be fixed? That suddenly whatever the issues that were happening with Bradford, of his unwillingness to make reads, to go to a second, third option, or to wait for a play to develop, it feels like that this divide, even if, you know, I'm getting caught, and I'll be the first to say, like I've said on this show many, many, many times, I get caught up with this stuff. I immediately go to the positive what I can, and it feels like, oh, Josh Rosen's in there, things are going to go better. Now, I understand this. Because of the type of talent that we believe he is, the vibe around the team is that things are going to get better. Now, they might turn the ball over a whole bunch now. We do see young quarterbacks do that at high rates, is turn the ball over because they're trying to do too much, or they're not used to what they're seeing. And, you know, like what happened on Sunday. He just, you know, he made a throw, an outside throw, a tough throw. He needed to get more arm on it, and there was good coverage. And so it wasn't perfectly placed, and it didn't have enough arm on it. Therefore, good coverage, a turnover instead. And I expect to see flashes of really good mixed in with, oh, dadgummit. But because he's a young quarterback, because he's a rookie, you can live with that, right, for the potential highs.
Right, and you can live with the learning experiences. I think the thing is with Rosen and the hope, and what I wrote about the other day, you know, that he offers, is he's not, you know, he's obviously not Baker Mayfield with the way he plays. He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not those rookies. But he is closer to you know, Drew Brees and Philip Rivers in the way that they're athletically able to maneuver within the pocket.
Or even Carson Palmer, who was very good at moving within the pocket.
Right. But then he also gives you the – and you know what? Carson Wentz is probably the best the best comparison in that, in athletic ability, because when you look at Rosen, he does similar things to Wentz in the pocket, but he's just as athletic outside of the pocket as Wentz. He's just he's not a guy that has to use it a ton because he's able to stay within the pocket and make, you know, prolong things. But I think it's going to help the offense. I think it's going to help the offensive line to have a guy that's a little more athletic and able to move a little bit back there, which should, as you said, hopefully help out that passing game, which in turn should allow the Cardinals to get a little breather on running into 8-9 men boxes, and even when it's 7 men facing 7 men boxes with big run blitzes on, which has basically been what they've been dealing with the last three games, because other teams are basically daring Sam Bradford to beat them. I mean, there's no question about it. They were saying, go ahead, Sam, like make these throws. We don't think you can. And he was saying, no, you're right. I'm going to check down and go short and live to see another play.
Now, do you see moving forward? Do you see the outlook changing? I think obviously the way things were trending with Bradford, something was up. And I gotta say, there was something wrong with Bradford. I don't know what it is. I don't know if he was uncomfortable with the offense, whether his, you know,
I still think it was a combination of what you were saying, bubble wrap, and then just a year off. I mean, he was a year off, and then they bubble wrapped him. I mean, they gave him the Carson Palmer treatment in the fourth and fifth year of the Bruce Arians offense. And I mean, it was a new offense, a new system, a new team, new players, and they're not making this guy. I mean, they basically, he didn't throw it all over the summer. That was all Josh Rosen. And so you go in and, like I said, you throw 11 passes against live competition. I mean, it's on the coaching staff from that point of not getting to know where Bradford was against live bullets. And that's on the coaching staff. You can never go back and fix that. But if they would have done that, I think they would have seen that he was cooked. I mean, he just was. It physically, it wasn't there anymore. And that's unfortunate, because it happens to everybody. It's just a matter of time. And unfortunately for Bradford, even though he's 31, his body is, you know, probably closer to 41 in just what he's gone through in his career.
And that's the weird thing, because you normally don't see quarterbacks do that at that particular age. So this brings to the next question, and that's, what do you do with Bradford now? Adam Schefter made very public something that pretty much, if you're a Cardinals fan, other than the lay fan, the casual fan, you knew this fact. Sam Bradford's contract had $5 million in roster bonuses for games as he acted. So it's a little more than $300,000, $312,500 that he gets every game that he is active. It was injury protection so that he had to perform and he had to stay healthy. And that was something that the Cardinals actually do quite a bit. Not necessarily to that extent, but they will typically, up to about $750,000 in a year in many contracts for being active on game days. So Adam Schefter talks about how, you know, well, the Cardinals could save a lot of money by benching him, but it wouldn't be just a benching. It would be moving to the third string where he's inactive on game days or releasing him. What do you do with Bradford now? Do you move him down to third string and let Mike Glennon be your active game day quarterback and have one of your offensive team captains sit as a healthy scratch? Is that what you do? Or do you hope that he you know, over the course of the next week or two, figure things out and then, you know, get things right mentally or whatever it is to be able to come in, if anything, because guess what? Josh Rosen also has a history of getting hurt. And to be the guy who can come in and, you know, maybe fix things and play closer to the level what people was expected.
You know, that's the hard part. When you make a move like this that is clearly – it's clearly in the idea of we're moving forward now. Bradford's not in this team's plans. I mean, he never was. We knew that from the beginning, but it's really hard. It's really hard to face a guy and tell him that. However, when you move on, and that's basically what's happening. How do you go back? Like obviously if there's an injury, I think that's really the only way you can go. Yeah. I don't think you can have him active on game days, completely honest, because there can never be a question or even, quite frankly, a conversation about Sam Bradford going back to Bradford. I mean, at this point, you have to say, I am committed to the Josh Rosen experience. I mean, we're going to get out of it whatever we can. And I'll say this. I haven't been enthralled with the coaching job of Steve Wilks, and I think it would be a very odd thing if outside of a season-ending injury, Sam Bradford took another snap for the Arizona Cardinals.
And that's what I'm talking about is I don't personally – I think what they're going to do this week, and this is kind of what it suggests, is Steve Wilks said on Monday that both Mike Glennon and Sam Bradford are the backups. Now, the depth chart came out and said Bradford's number two. That doesn't necessarily mean stuff for game days based on what we've seen so far. Dayon Buchanan's listed still as a starter, but he never plays. TJ Logan listed as a starter. He's a healthy scratch. And Brandon Williams, the kick returner. JJ Nelson's listed as the backup. JJ Nelson hasn't done anything with kick returns yet. That being said, it sounds like he's going to open it up to kind of competition so that, you know, that Bradford and Glennon can compete for that number two spot, which I'm okay with. Now, it comes to the case. So if Rosen gets hurt, who would you rather come into the game? Would you rather Sam Bradford or Mike Glennon? To me, I still think, even with what's happened to Bradford, I still think that Sam Bradford, because Mike Glennon is Mike Glennon.
I'm 100% with you. I think Glennon is your kind of Ryan Lindley, if you will. Like, he's your break in case of emergency type of player. Like, oh my gosh, Rosen's down, and then, oh god, Bradford's down, okay, but in the same way, I think on game days, I think it has to be Glennon as the backup, because I don't think there can be any conversation about, oh, you know, Josh is struggling, should they go to Sam? And because of what you said about Glennon, I don't think you'd ever have that conversation.
Well, and I honestly don't think it would be an issue with the team, and I don't think it would be an issue with the fans. Steve Wilks made it very clear that Rosen's going to be the start until he loses the job. That said, the idea of, and some people are saying, hey, put Brad, make Bradford inactive because you're going to save the team money. I have a small problem with that because of this. That contract was signed with the intention of that being injury protection. And, well, a couple of things. Well, one, it would be kind of weird to me, and so if I'm seeing as a teammate that one of your team captains is inactive on game days to save money. And I don't, you know, the Cardinals were known as an organization to save money. If we go back to, what, way back to the early, the mid 90s when they, I believe it was when they bent, when they, I know it was Boomer Esiason, and I can't remember if they moved, went to Kent Graham or Dave Brown, because if Esiason made another start, he was going to get, I think, another, like another $500,000. And I don't think to this day that Boomer has ever forgiven the team for doing that. They've really tried their hardest to not look like that. I get why people would want to say, hey, do this. But he's a team captain. And so to have him be a healthy scratch when would you probably believe that he's better than Mike Glennon? And you still believe in him. Now, you're going to believe in Rosen, and you're going to trust in him. So you're never doubting that part. But to see him, I think it sends a little bit of an odd message. And two, in terms of the contract itself, I'm always pro player because – this is a player's game. The owners and franchises make money. And so because Bradford is healthy, to me, it is leading into the end, to the side of bad faith to bench him to save the money when he's healthy. When the whole idea was to pay him because he's staying healthy. Now, at the same time, I can see the other side. No one ever foresaw this. They never signed that contract with the idea that he was going to be benched because of poor play. That's the other thing. But yeah, I still think, I get maybe a week or two, you've got Glennon as your active game day quarterback, but I don't know. I still think I'd rather have Sam Bradford out there, because if Rosen gets hurt, I still think you'd rather have Sam Bradford. And I think the idea as well, open the competition. Okay. Bradford and Glennon are competing for that number two spot. And maybe that competition is what he needs to get his mind right. It refocuses him, gets him set on, what he needs to do to execute with the offense so that if the moment comes again, that he is effective.
Yeah. And I see the point of that. I have no issue or, horse in the race of not paying players ever. I'm with you. Like, get all the money as much as you can. So that's not my reasoning for that. My reasoning is I don't want the presence of Bradford to ever become a conversation.
Right.
For Rosen or an, even an inkling, like if he goes out and throws three interceptions against the Seahawks, there doesn't need to be a conversation. That's kind of my whole thought process. And again, if
I think there's one exception, if he goes out and looks like Ryan Lindley, then that's a completely different conversation,
right?
But that's the quarterback that is.
But that, yeah, exactly. That's hey, guess what? When we draft first next year, we're in the Justin Herbert sweepstakes or the Haskins sweepstakes, the kid from Ohio State. Like that's where you're at then, as opposed to been. Geez. So
with that, what do you think this team's outlook is looking forward? I still have the, no more do I think that they have a 6-10 win window, clearly. No, definitely not 7 wins. But I still think that with Rosen and natural improvements that will come with time and adjustments in a new system offensively and defensively, I can see this team rallying for as many as 6 wins. And with what we have seen thus far, I'd consider that a huge win.
And I go to this. I'm always of the belief that as you get more information, you change your expectations. And right now, I think the expectations have to be changed to this team just needs to build towards being competitive. And they did that this week. I mean, I don't want it to look like I'm saying that's not what happened this week, but they need to continue to stay competitive and then from there to start winning games. And so, do I think that they can do it? Yes, I do. I think that they could probably still win 4 or 5 games. I was actually talking to Steve Palazzolo, who's like one of the lead analysts for Pro Football Focus, and he did a mock draft, and they had the Cardinals picking fifth, and I jokingly slash not jokingly said to him, why on earth do you have the Cardinals picking fifth? Like, have you not watched them play? And he said, we're using our ELO kind of model. I don't really know what ELO stands for, so don't ask me. Like, we're using that model to project where they're going to finish. And so that's why. And I said, okay, that doesn't make any sense. Have you not watched the Cardinals play? But he's like, you know, they have them projected to win more games than four teams picking in front of them. And so when you look at it from those things, it's hard to see this team being 0-16, right? Like, that's it seems nearly impossible, if you will. So where do they end up? I think you're right in that wheelhouse of, I said 7 wins, and I'm usually pretty, like, if I say 7, it could be 5, it could be 9, and none of it would surprise me. Now I'm at the point where it's like, all right, I think 5 wins is really where they're at. And that means if they only won 3, wouldn't shock me. If they won 7, I'd be really surprised, but I think that would mean that they're heading towards a positive. So, you know, I would say 5 right now is kind of where I think that they could land, and, you know, 3 to 6 wouldn't surprise me.
And with that, let's move on to the next segment of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about, well, other stuff. We're going to talk about other stuff other than Josh Rosen. So we're going to look at, well, what went wrong against the Bears and that David Johnson absence. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And now we got a lot to talk about with the Bears game. Everything started out so well. They come out, they get the ball on offense first. They go and score a touchdown. And then, you know, later in the first quarter, they force a turnover. One play later, they score another touchdown. And it looks like that progress that we wanted to see, that you know, I talked about last week. Hey, maybe things are going to go. We saw the improvement of the run defense from week 1 to week 2. What if week 2 to week 3, they fix other things? And it looked like, oh my gosh, the Cardinals are going to get a win. But then what happened? Now, you talked about once they got off script. So once they left the script for the game preparation, things went back to yuck.
Yeah, and that was, you know, that's something we've seen with the Bears the first couple of games, and this week the Cardinals held up on their against the Bears script, and meanwhile the Cardinals script was really, really good. They put in, you know, a play where we saw, hey, is that David Johnson running a vertical route? Revenge of the Birds will have a wonderful breakdown from our film analyst, Karan Gill, on the play itself tomorrow, and kind of how they set it up and made it work. And you look at it and you go, oh, holy cow. Everybody, Bradford made a great throw. They put, you know, Johnson down the field, Mike McCoy, okay, you're being a little more aggressive. That's 3 shots down the field in the first quarter. Not even the first half, just the first quarter. Like, all right, this is heading the right way. And then yeah, the script ran out, and all of a sudden you're looking at it and you're going, holy crap, this is the same bad offense. You know, I went back and looked because I wanted to make sure. I didn't want to say anything incorrectly. So after they scored the touchdown, which was, you know, one play, after they scored the touchdown, their next drives were punt, 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 interception. Interception, fumble interception out of time. And so when you look at that, you go, man, this offense is really bad, right? Like it's cool to score 14 points in the first quarter, but if you don't follow it up with anything, I mean, they literally had one drive back into scoring position and then the fumble occurred. It's hard to come up with positives for that. And in that way, you see the disconnect between whether it's McCoy and his players on offense or the quarterback and McCoy. I mean, I think that's going to be our first kind of show is what does the offense look like now with Josh Rosen at quarterback? Is it more aggressive? Are they willing to take more shots down the field? Are we seeing them attack down the field more? And if so, I think we'll be able to, you know, say with conviction, like, yeah, Sam Bradford was playing scared. If it's kind of still the same where you're seeing a lot of short routes, a lot of stuff underneath, a lot of quick stuff, and you're still seeing games where they're averaging or, you know, getting less than 200 yards of total offense, then it's Mike McCoy, because even if you want to say Josh Rosen is bad, it's really hard in the NFL to average less than 200 yards of total offense in a game. I mean, it's really, really hard.
Well, especially how the NFL is. And here's the thing. The NFL quarterbacks in the league this year are putting up staggering numbers in terms of completion percentage. And Sam Bradford is below his career average. And so you have a time when quarterback play and quarterback production is at an all-time high. And we're getting blech. The only game I can kind of compare this to is I think it was a 2014 when it was Drew Stanton starting and they got two Michael Floyd touchdowns in the first quarter and they managed to win 14-6 over the Detroit Lions. Now, the difference was this. They didn't turn the ball over. So it became the defense was dominant and the offense would go, you know, would go two or three first downs, field position. They'd punt, and so they give them a long field. And that's what the problem was this time, is that the defense finally wore down. And so when, you know, when you're punting the first and second, you know, they gave up the 3 points at the end of the half, which was a win, by the way, considering what had happened in the first quarter, in the second quarter of the previous 2 weeks. But after that, it's just the fact that they, you know, they were giving the ball. It was turnover, turnover, turnover. That's what made it unbearable, because the turnovers will break the soul of a defense. You know, if your offense does something good, the defense will come out and play well. If you get a couple first down flip field positions, a defense will feel supported. You turn the ball over, mentally, that wears them down. And that's essentially what happened. And will that end stupid? I mean, kind of the same things we've seen that we saw all preseason continue to be the problem again. So offensively, after that first drive, third down was a problem. They continued to have problems with penalties. And it wasn't the number of penalties. It was the timing of the penalties, the roughing the passer penalties they had that led to the touchdown. The Hassan Reddick offsides, which, you know, instead of an incomplete pass to lead to a punt, they ended up scoring. I mean, they had dumb penalties. And, you know, ultimately, you give the ball away four different times, you're not going to win football games unless you have Carson Palmer and Michael Floyd against the Seattle team in 2013 when the defense is playing out of their mind and you really committed to running the ball. But that's really about it.
Yeah, and so when you look at it, you know, you want to talk about the offense a little bit. Total yards on the season, they're at 571. The next lowest team is the Buffalo Bills with 738. So 157 point or yard differential. Lowest amount of points in the league, Cardinals with 20. The next closest team's 41. I mean, so half the amount. Cardinals, despite running the fewest plays in the NFL, 142 plays, have the second most turnovers in the league. So that's the whole point, is that it's not necessarily volume. I mean, volume matters, and it definitely is an issue that they can't produce any type of volume. However, volume isn't the be-all, end-all of winning football games. You don't have to be, you know, the Chiefs running a million plays in a game or get putting up massive amount of yards. I mean, you don't have to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Ryan Fitzpatrick throwing for, you know, 400 yards a game. You don't have to do that. But when you do run plays, you have to run positive plays, and you have to protect the football. I mean, you have to take care of the football. And when you have the highest turnover percentage in the league by just a staggering amount, I mean, 22% of each offensive drive ends in a turnover for the Arizona Cardinals. Meanwhile, only 9% of every offensive drive ends in a score, not even a touchdown, a score for the Arizona Cardinals. So their offense has not only been bad in this scheme of pure raw stats, but it's been bad in every advanced metric way of looking at things, because not only are they not getting big plays or making big plays, but they're not protecting the football as well.
And the other part to this is, the other part we want to talk about is this: when it came down to crunch time, perhaps the biggest critical point, probably the biggest play of the year, was 3rd and 2. You know, they're Josh Rosen's in the game, and it's after the 2-minute warning. They have a 3rd and 2. They have a chance to extend the drive to get themselves close to, you know, get that game-winning field goal. 3rd and 2 on the field, and it's Chase Edmonds on a counter play to the left, and he's tackled for a 3-yard loss, which led us to the question asked by many: why wasn't David Johnson on the field? David Johnson claims it was because he was being, you know, he was having to be accounted for a mistake that he made on the previous play. That aside, now I kind of broke down. So if we want to take things at face value, David Johnson made a mistake, and I will be the first to tell you this: David Johnson is not having a good year. Obviously, statistically, it's not. But it's not like David Johnson's been good. When he's run the ball, he's not been good. He hasn't gotten help from the offensive line, but he hasn't been good because he didn't have a good offensive line in 2016 when he put up all those numbers. He's missing assignments. He's dropping passes. He's missed several blitz pickups in 3 games. So David Johnson is not the David Johnson of 2 years ago, and he is still adjusting. And so there was the need for coaching. I don't know if that was actually what happened there. But in any case, they have a running back that they trust. Here, what was the problem for you? Because everyone looked and said, why are you running a slow developing play on 3rd and 2 with your backup running back instead of giving to David Johnson? Steve Wilks doubled down a couple of times, said, we trust Chase, we trust the play call. It was bad blocking, which it was.
It was awful blocking. I mean, and I said that today. You know, Tim Ring tweeted out, you know, we pressed him on it, and he like you said, he doubled down on it. Just, they needed to execute better. Well, yeah, they did. You're 100% correct. They needed to execute better. However, I think that goes back to what you and I have talked about, and that clearly there's a misconception of what they are as a team and who they have from a standpoint of ability, because you shouldn't have asked your team or your players to do something that they're not capable of. And that's kind of what that ended up being. You looked at the play, they pulled John Wetzel and Ricky Seals-Jones on the play. Ricky Seals-Jones isn't exactly known to be a great blocker. He works hard at it. He's gotten slightly better at it, but he doesn't know, you know, he's not a great blocker. So why isn't Jermaine Gresham in the game at that point? The other thing with a play like that is the crux of the play itself is that you're asking Justin Pugh and Mason Cole to make down blocks to ensure that there's no backside penetration, because that's what kills a play like that, as we saw in the game. And what happens? Well, it ends up getting killed by the backside guy. I think it was Akeem Hicks, who played an outstanding game. I mean, take nothing away from Akeem Hicks. He just completely ate Wetzel and Pugh up at from his defensive end position. And it ended up just being one of those situations where it was a bad call at a bad time with the wrong people running the play. And I think it goes to show that there are situations still that this coaching staff are trying to figure out. However, the most experienced person on the staff was the one that made that play call. And so that is, to me, where the issue comes in. Because this isn't Mike McCoy's first rodeo, right? Like, McCoy has been not only a successful offensive coordinator, but a successful head coach, having led the Chargers to the playoffs. So for him to make that call was interesting, I guess, is the polite way to put it.
Which leads us to the next question we're talking about on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk about the coaching. What's going wrong? What can we talk about with this? So we're coming back with that on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best Cardinals talk, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And this is what we wanted to talk about. Well, we're talking about the coaching. So is the coaching staff in trouble? I mean, it's only been three games, and my goodness, do you start talking about this job security of these coaches when clearly not everyone is comfortable doing what they need to? Do we need to start questioning the hire of Steve Wilks? Do we need to question the addition of Mike McCoy as the offensive coordinator? Or do we need to, after this, you know, if you look at it, guess what? Maybe we've just expected too much, because all we've ever heard from the media is just how an inexperienced Steve Wilks is going to be and how bad the offense is going to be. And maybe we should have believed him, because everyone here locally said this team's too talented. They've got Patrick Peterson, they've got Chandler Jones, they have David Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, and now they've got a very competent Sam Bradford. And like, they won eight games with Drew Stanton and Blaine Gabbert starting games for them. Of course they're going to be fine. So maybe that was something to that. But should we start turning up the heat on coaches like Wilks? Should we start questioning whether he has what it takes to be a head coach in this league?
So I'm not there yet. I don't think it's fair. It's three games. He admitted his communication mistake in calling a timeout with what, 30 seconds left or whatever, right before halftime, and said, you know, there's just a communication error on it. So he's learning. He's trying to learn. He's getting better. So that being said, I and I, you know, I tweeted this out after that 3rd-and-2 play. I'm done with Mike McCoy. I see why the Broncos ran him out of town after 4 games or 6 games or however few games it was, because it was a very few amount of games, and why they, you know, why he was run out of San Diego as well. And it's just, I don't have any use for a guy that doesn't understand the modern game of football. I think it's unfair to the players, and I think it's unfair to the talent they have on this team to continue to put him, to allow him to call plays, because it is obvious that not only was Bradford an issue, but the play calling has been an issue as well. And it kind of, you know, all came to a head on that 3rd-and-2 play.
So if we're done with McCoy, what do we do then?
Well, I think it's one of those situations where you have to, you know, you have to have an idea of what you have on the staff. Obviously the two guys that you look at right away would be Kevin Garver, the wide receiver coach, and then Byron Leftwich, the quarterback coach. They're obviously left over from the Arians staff, so Keim knows them. They're not Wilkes guys per se, but he thought enough of them to keep them on the staff as well. So, you know, when you look at it from that perspective, I would say those are the two guys that I would go to next, but they're not going to right now. I can say that with all certainty that it's not going to happen right now. However, I think if in 2 games we're still talking about a team that's averaging 6.7 points per game, that,
hey, we need to point out they more than doubled their average.
Right. Yeah. They went from 3 points a game to 6.7. So we're trending upward. So, you know, if they're at 12 or 13 points per game next week, I think they're in a good spot, right?
Yes, absolutely. Especially because the amount of points is going to have to take to get to that point. So, yeah. Anyway, yes. So this is obviously it's not going to happen. And especially thus far. Now, I will tell you this. I didn't catch it so much, but Steve Wilkes he's already called out Mike McCoy. He already called him out without saying Mike McCoy needs to do this. We all know that Mike McCoy is running the offense. And he said last week, yes, we need to get more creative. We need to get David Johnson in space, flex him out at receiver. What did we see in the very big first play? David Johnson was lined up at receiver. Then he motioned back into the backfield. But we saw some of that, especially in the first quarter, things were going better. And so Wilkes has not been afraid to call, to subtly, in my opinion, call out Mike McCoy for a better game plan. Now, naturally, Wilkes is a part of that game planning process. He is. But the nuts and bolts of this isn't like Bruce Arians, who was the de facto offensive coordinator. It wasn't really Harold Goodwin. I mean, Goodwin was part of the process, but this was really was the BA show, just like it is the Sean McVay show with the Rams, Kyle Shanahan show with the 49ers, and many of these other offensive teams, Dirk Cutter in Tampa Bay. But this is very different. And so you've got a defensive head coach who's giving the offensive everything over to McCoy. Hopefully this doesn't turn into an Amos Jones situation where Wilkes is saying, no, I'm tied to this guy. I brought him in. I'm not going to turn my back on him. I'm going to support him through thick and thin.
Yeah. And I mean, there's a respect level to that. But in the same way that you say things like the best 11 are going to be on the field, that's why Deion Buchanan and Hassan Reddick aren't playing. I think you need to look at it from the perspective of you've got to put the coaching staff and the guys in the best chance to win, you know, games.
And with that, when we come back for the next segment of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the final segment, we're going to talk about the 2 games coming up, specifically the Seahawks game coming up this weekend. Can they finally get on the board? Can we get Josh Rosen a win? And can he do it against a team the Cardinals haven't beaten at home since 2012? That's coming next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And let's look ahead at the Seattle Seahawks. They look very beat. Now, the Cardinals are bad. They look bad. But at least for the next 2 games, these games look beatable and look a very, very good way for Josh Rosen to get his feet wet is against the Seattle Seahawks team, where the defense is not what it used to be. And then against the San Francisco 49ers team, which still, outside of Jimmy Garoppolo, looks like a pretty not so great team. And now they've lost Jimmy Garoppolo for the extent of the season with a torn ACL. Looking ahead to Seattle, is this really a winnable game for the Cardinals?
Again, I think it goes back to, I don't know. And that's just being fair. I mean, we didn't think the Bears game was winnable until it was. The Seahawks have been in all three of their games, so they're clearly a superior – they've clearly been a superior team in their first three games. They've obviously have a win, which is, you know, more than the Cardinals. But they've also – they were in – both the Bears, their loss to the Bears, and then their loss on opening week. Can't remember the team they lost to at this point. But when you look at it from that part, again, coming in, they have been better than the Cardinals. However, you always have a wild card and an unknown when you're starting a rookie. We saw it last year with Deshaun Watson against the Patriots when he almost pulled out a big win, and Watson in Seattle when they win that game? I can't even remember, but he had a huge game in Seattle against the Seahawks. And so when you look at it from that perspective, and then you look at the fact that the Seahawks offense is close, not nearly as bad. Let's just get that out of the way, but they're close to Cardinals level in terms of performance thus far. So when you look at it from those perspectives, you look at it and you say, all right, this is a game that if the Cardinals are going to get on the board, this is definitely one of the games that you would circle as winnable.
Right. And their offense last week, they beat the Cowboys. They lost the Broncos in week one, 27-24. But their offense was successful because they ran a ball a crap ton with Chris Carson. The Cardinals can defend now, and especially the traditional physical backs between the tackles. They do have trouble with the gadget backs, with the Tariq Cohens of the world, with the, you know, some of the other guys that you're going to come across in the league. That's not what Seattle has. And so they have a running game and a running scheme that the Cardinals can contain. Seattle does not have a great offensive line. Russell Wilson's going to have to keep doing the magic himself. But then again, the Cardinals have not beaten the Seahawks at State Farm Stadium since Russell Wilson's NFL debut. And even then, the Cardinals still almost lost. So there's definitely, this is not the same. This is not going to, you know, you say we looked at that 6-6 tie that the Cardinals had against the Seahawks a couple seasons ago. Like, but that was at least there was a game in which the Cardinals dominated, but both defenses were dominant. This game might be that bad, but in terms of not defensive domination, but in terms of offensive ineptness. Now, I have them pegged for a 19-17 win. I think the Cardinals will do a little, and I think Josh Rosen does give them a spark. I think they get David Johnson back involved the right way, and I think both teams will be in this game late, and it'll come down, as it often does, to who makes the plays late, or rather, who doesn't screw up late.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. I think where the Seahawks clearly have the edge at this point is experience at quarterback. When you look at it from that perspective, you always go with, you know, the guy that's proven and done it a number of times before, and that's Russell Wilson. He's one of the special quarterbacks in the NFL. He's one of those guys that, you know, just he knows how to win football games, even when he maybe has no talent around him. And so from that perspective, you go, you know, you obviously give them that. Their pass rush and run defense is not like you said, it's not the Seahawks of old. But one thing they have done really well through the first 3 weeks is create turnovers. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that is, I think, and you hit on it earlier, that is the biggest concern coming into this game is can the Cardinals survive the Josh Rosen first game experience? Can he put himself in a position to not make mistakes, to not turn the ball over, to not get his, you know, team in negative positions? Because we know that the Cardinals defense is good or getting better. I don't know if you'd call them good yet, but that they're getting better, especially against the run. But are they good enough to overcome turnovers? And we saw against an offense that I think is pretty similar in terms of efficiency, again, you know, in the Chicago Bears, we saw that the answer to that was no. They're not good enough to overcome that, you know, continued turnovers on offense. So that's where the game's going to come down to. I from a prediction standpoint, if you told me it was 28-27, I'd buy it. If you told me it was 9-6, I'd buy it. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at in this game. The hope is obviously that Rosen comes out and starts to perform right away and plays at a high level at the very beginning, and the Cardinals are able to get something, anything sustained offensively, not just two touchdowns, right? But a sustained focus on offense and a sustained efficiency on offense. That's the goal this week. So I'll just take a guess. I'll say like 17-14 Cardinals win on a last second field goal. This week they get the field goal they need to win.
Nice. Now, who's the player that you're worried about in this game? I'm not sure if Doug Baldwin's going to be back or not. Tyler Lockett, he's producing right now. That'll be the player to kind of watch. And it'll be interesting to see as the Cardinals head into the game on Sunday, who will be starting at cornerback opposite Patrick Peterson, since apparently Benay Benwickery has put himself on the map. He replaced him. And that was a question. I thought Taylor was hurt. I'll be perfectly honest. I thought Taylor was hurt. And so I was the guy that asked Wilkes after the game, say, hey, did anything happen to Jamar? And he said, nope, I felt we need a spark at the position, so I made the move. So he basically said that he benched Taylor for Benwickery. And Benwickery and Taylor are going to split the reps this week. And my guess is Benwickery's probably going to start this week unless something significantly changes with how Taylor practices, which means it'll be interesting that way, because Benwickery is a journeyman at best. He's a young journeyman at that.
Yeah, and the guy, the biggest concern I have from the Seahawks, obviously outside of Russell Wilson, is the young tight end Will Disley, that had two really big games to start the season for them, three touchdowns and like near 20 receptions, over 200 yards receiving the first 2 weeks of the season. Week three was kind of the comeback down to earth part of it, but when you look at the Cardinals defense through 2 weeks, I think the question has been, can they get consistent pass rush down? And if so, you know, who's it going to come from? We've seen a little bit, you know, Benson Mayoa had the 3-sack game. Chandler Jones has 2 sacks on the season. Robert Kimdiche has 2 sacks on the season. Don't tell anybody, but he's playing really well. So, you know, we know the big names, Wilson, like you said, Tyler Lockett is their go-to receiver right now, but Can they cover the young tight end Will Disley? Is he gonna, you know, come back up and put up another big performance? That's kind of the guy I'm looking at on offense for the Seahawks.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. We'll be come back next week. Hopefully, we've got some positives to talk about. But in any case, win or lose, we will be talking about Josh Rosen for the good part of all our shows for the next several weeks. And so that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We'll be back next week talking about the Cardinals, Josh Rosen, and more. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Rise up! Rise up!